This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create positive change in the world every day by being a conscious consumer. I'm your host, Laura Alexander Wittig, founder of Brightly.eco, and I started this podcast a few years ago because I wanted a place to talk about the gray areas around sustainability and how being a conscious consumer can be challenging and confusing, but it's totally doable. So join me in the name of reducing waste and living positively in the name of the planet.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, Good Together listeners. I am so excited for today's episode because it is one of the top, the topic that we're going to talk about, which is, are eco-friendly cleaners actually working, is a question I get almost on a daily basis. And I thought, who better to discuss this with us than Jason Tetros? He's been on our podcast before. We talked a lot about the science behind, you know, germs and, you know, microbes and spread around the world. So I thought, let's bring it back into the home and talk a little bit more about, you know, whether or not we're getting what we think we're getting out of our eco-friendly cleaners. So Jason, welcome. I wonder if you could just do a really brief intro for yourself for those who didn't get a chance to listen to our previous episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hello, first off. My name is Jason Tetro, as you said, and I'm sometimes known as the germ guy.
Yes.
And I know that that sounds really weird to a lot of people, but, you know, we have spokespeople for a lot of things, right? We have spokespeople for companion animals. We have spokespeople for farm animals. Well, I am a spokesperson for microbial animals. That's basically why they call me the germ guy. And my whole idea and mission is really to create a much better relationship between us and those invisible microorganisms that are absolutely everywhere. And in doing so, what I'm also trying to do is help people understand that when it comes to the bad ones, the bad germs, the ones from the other side of the tracks, if you want to call it that, that there are ways to make sure that they don't come around you, they don't infect you, and they don't make you sick so that you can continue to have that great relationship. And of course, when we talk about cleaning and disinfecting, that's exactly where we are. And so I guess that's a great launching point to let's get into it.
Absolutely. And I think one thing as we even take a little bit of a step back, listeners, and think about the impact of, you know, all of the things that work in our ecosystem around us in the world. And I think wanting to make sure that we're properly educated about microbes, while, you know, like what Jason and I, what Jason just said, like, while that might not seem like, I don't know, the most interesting thing, it actually is. It's fascinating. And it's something that we should all be, I think, a little bit more, you know, curious about. And so that's why I love talking to the germ guy. So yeah, I mean, Jason, as we talk about this, like, oftentimes there's like two camps of people, right? Mm-hmm. There's people who are actually, I'd say three. There's some people who are like, die hard. I'm only going to use cleaners that are like bleach, hardcore stuff. These are the people that I'd say are the extreme skeptics, and they don't think that anything that is quote unquote eco-friendly works. On the other side of things, you have people who are only sort of like making their own cleaner, right? They're using vinegar, they're using lemon juice, they're using sort of these extremely natural approaches that may or may not work to the extent that they think they do. And then in the middle, I think you have most of us, which are, you know, we're wanting to kind of think about both ends of the spectrum. We want to make sure, especially like coming out of a pandemic or cold and flu season, et cetera, like we want to make sure that when we use a product, it's going to work. But we also at the same time don't want to use anything that's toxic or, you know, going to be bad for us in our homes or in the environment around us. So yeah. I kind of feel like in general, people feel very strongly about this, though. I'm sure you get that a lot.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it has been one of those situations where I have seen that debate happen to such an extent that it almost gets a little bit vitriolic. And I kind of have to go, okay, just hold off a second here, people.
Yeah.
We can all have our way and still make it great. The difference, okay, is not about whether or not we're safe or unsafe or whether we're, you know, environmental working group approved, EWG approved, or if we're EPA approved, or if we are, you know, 100% eco-friendly. All of that stuff is really more just, you know, they're check marks on a list to prove that, yes, your product is kind of good and no, your product maybe not be so good. What we really want to do is start looking at what's inside of the bottle. We can get into the actual bottle itself in a minute, but we have to look at what's inside the bottle. And if it's something that has been tested day in and day out for hundreds of years, like bleach, then you know that, yeah, it's going to work. But if you're looking at something that's a little bit more eco-friendly, as they like to say, something that's a little bit more natural, we're talking about the vinegars, we're talking about the citric acids, we're talking about, you know, the thyme oils and all this stuff. Well, then what you have to do is you have to stop thinking about all the check marks and just remember two things, 5 and 10. It has to be about 5% of whatever that active ingredient you want to use is. And then you have to let it sit wet on a surface for 10 minutes. That's your 5 and 10.
And that is something that most people do not know. Like letting something sit for 10 minutes. And as a matter of fact, I would say most people probably put things on a surface for like 30 seconds if that, right?
Exactly. And you can do that if you're using one of the traditional disinfectants. And what's really funny is that there's one that spans both the eco and the well-tested, which is hydrogen peroxide, where if you use one that is what we call activated or accelerated hydrogen peroxide, you can put it on the surface for 30 seconds and it's going to do the same job as, say, a bleach, but it's going to have no residue or no impact the same way you would with, you know, a thyme oil or something like that.
Absolutely. And listeners, thyme oil, for instance, is one that's, you can find that in brands like Seventh Generation.
Yeah.
When you go look. So one thing that hopefully you'll be inspired to do after hearing this podcast is, you know, when you go to the cleaning section, you know, of your local grocery store, et cetera, just flip around the label and see what they're saying is the active ingredient. And thymol is interesting. Like that one is derived from the thyme plant. Am I correct? Is that where that it comes from?
Yeah. So yeah. Thymol is from the thyme plant.
Yeah.
Thymol is from the pine plant. Usually, not all the time, but usually the name of the terpene or the alcohol that is the active ingredient will actually have the plant that it comes from. If it's based on some kind of a plant.
Yeah, absolutely. And the funny thing about thymol specifically is it smells like thyme. to me, like when you spray it, it does kind of have like that smell a little bit.
And the funny thing is that a lot of people, especially some of the people who are above the age of 40, are going to remember certain types of scents. And as a result of that, you can almost get an idea of what that actual disinfectant had in it, okay? So when you talk about pineol or pine sol, as they used to call it in the brand names, it has that piney smell. Well, that's the pineol that's actually coming from pine oil, right?
Yep.
If it has that sort of almost coal-like smell, if anyone actually remembers what coal smells like, well, that actually was a particular disinfectant that actually came from coal. So the reality is that sometimes you can kind of tell what was in there as an active ingredient just by the way that it smells. And of course, bleach has a particular type of smell. That's the chlorine. Alcohol is going to have its own kind of smell. It's going to be that sort of pungenty. And isopropyl alcohol, which is the rubbing alcohol you see on the shelves, or ethanol, which is what we have in hand sanitizers, have that smell. And so, you know, if you open up the cap and you take in that smell, sometimes you'll have that active ingredient smell in your nose. And you're like, okay, I know what this is because I can see it in my head.
Yep.
Where we run into issues is when you start using active ingredients that don't have a smell or have sort of this neutral smell. And these are names like quaternary ammonium compounds. A lot of the Lysols are like that. Triclosan, mm-hmm. which thankfully we're no longer seeing much of. This is where you start going, I don't really smell that active ingredient. What's in there? And that's, of course, where the label really comes into play, because then you can see. And if it's one of these, you know, very, very long names, then you know that this is the type of chemical that probably is going to be effective because it's obviously been tested, but it may not necessarily have the environmental friendliness that you're looking for, right?
So exactly.
That's the decision that you're going to make in that aisle. But by understanding sort of how it works from the production and regulatory perspective, it can help you to make the decision that you want.
Absolutely. And one of the, we talked about this on our last podcast, but one of my favorite cleaners is something called Force of Nature, which is a cleaner that basically takes, you have to have a little unit, you put a capsule, a sort of a pre-filled capsule of vinegar, for I believe that's all it is, salt and vinegar goes into this little unit, you put water in there, you press go, and you end up with a cleaner that is essentially, the way you described it to me, I think, Jason, was it basically is bleach, right? It's just like a very like watered down bleach. Is that kind of what it is?
Yeah. And that's where you're starting to get into taking something like tap water and a little bit of salt, and then you're throwing in some electricity into it. And then all of a sudden you're creating a disinfectant that's going to be good at that moment.
Yeah.
And I mean, these are the types of things. I mean, I still remember back in the 1990s, I had this device that looked like a kettle, and all it did was it electrolyzed water. So you had to put water in it, then you had to have a little bit of salt that you put into it. And then when you essentially got it to electrolyze itself, it created a couple of different types of antimicrobials. There was the chlorine that came from the salt. There was also ozone, which when it's put into a water is actually going to be a really good disinfectant. And so it just killed everything, right?
Yeah.
But the big
problem. Where's that device now? You know, I guess it just doesn't create money for these corporations, right?
Well, it's actually not. The big problem with this, okay, is the motivation factor. Because we're going to go away from microbes for a second. Do you remember something called SodaStream?
Yes, we have. Well, we had one for a long time. We don't have it anymore, but yes.
Yes. It essentially is carbonating water, and then you add flavor, right?
Yeah.
But back in the day, all it did was carbonate water, and everyone's like, why would I do this?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it's like, well, what if we make an entire range of it, like Crystal Light, and then we get Scarlett Johansson to pitch it? And then all of a sudden, it's like the biggest thing on the market.
Yeah.
And so that's really the problem, is that you may have the greatest invention of all time, which is what this really was, but unless you have the ability to motivate your audience to go for it, right, they're not going to look for it.
Well, I mean, that's totally right. And as we think about, you know, let's imagine a world where that device actually really took off. Like these big corporations, your P&Gs, et cetera, the world, like they'd be losing money, right? Like they would be, you know, they're the ones that have a big business that are, you know, pushing new products all the time. And so, yes, I think oftentimes some of these, more modern inventions or things that actually work really well, they kind of falter because there's no incentive from large corporations to get you to use them, which is interesting. And I think at the same time, that goes both ways. I mean, in terms of the big guys, there's also smaller startups that are, creating eco-friendly cleaners that like to, I would say, kind of verge on the precipice of misinformation sometimes to try and get you to buy things. And I think that maybe is what is unfortunate about this topic is I feel like it is very, not only is there a lot of misinformation, there's also a lot of, I think, like, fear behind it. Like, people just want to make sure that they're protecting themselves and their families at home from, you know, microbes that may not be welcome there. And we should probably talk about, like, how big of a problem that actually is. Maybe we're all just, like, a little bit too much of a germaphobe. But, like, these companies, they do prey on that a little bit. They prey on that fear and that sort of, yeah, that misinformation campaign. So, yeah, like, how big of a problem is it? Should we be just so scared about disinfecting everything, you know?
Look, when it comes to the home itself, right, you can pretty much guess what the germiest places are going to be. You got your bathroom. You've got your kitchen, and then you probably have the areas where you have a lot of congregation.
Yes.
So the coffee table itself is probably germier than you might think. And so in that sense, what you can do is you can sort of envision the different blocks of the areas in your home where you might want to be doing a little bit more disinfecting as opposed to just cleaning, right? And we can get into that in a second. But what I would definitely say is that whenever you have a situation where you're a little bit concerned, you're not exactly quite sure, I want you to go back to the pandemic for a second and think about it. When someone had a cold or COVID or any of those, what were the situations or what were the surfaces or what were the areas that you were most concerned about? And that's when you start to realize, okay, that coffee table, that remote control, yeah, that was an issue. And of course, the bathroom was an issue because we wanted to be sure that, you know, we were keeping that clean and nobody and everyone was washing their hands and everything like that. And we also want to be sure that when we were in the kitchen, we were, you know, not spreading everything around because a lot of people go into the kitchen. And you can start seeing your home that way. This is a process that we call targeted hygiene. And so when you've sort of come out of the pandemic and then you start thinking, okay, well, now I'm here, what am I going to be worried about? Well, you've got the fecal matter that's coming from the bathroom, so you got that covered. You've got the raw meats and the juices and the vegetables and everything that's in the kitchen, you got that covered. And you got all the different types of bodily fluids that people are putting, including your pets, don't forget your pets, that are going to be in those living rooms. And then you realize, okay, cool, we're good.
Yeah, so you don't have to freak out with the whole house.
Exactly. And then someone will be like, but Jason, what about the bed? What about the bed? Don't you think the bed? It's like, well, yeah, the bed is what's the bed sheets are going to be able to collect all the sweat. It's going to collect all the drool, all the little stuff that's there. But you know what? You wash your sheets.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you wash them. So, and that's something that you just, it's easy, right? You just throw it in the in the washer.
Exactly. So when you look at it from that perspective, then you start thinking, okay, well, now I have these little areas that I know need to be disinfected. And then everything else in the house, well, we just need to clean. And that's when you can go for all of these EWG approved cleaners and all of that stuff. Go for it. Have the best time in your life because there's no need to worry about the risk. Cleaning gets rid of dirt. Cleaning gets rid of grease. Cleaning gets rid of things that make you look at it and go, ooh, that's dirty. Disinfecting is where you get rid of the microbes.
Yep. And that makes total sense when you explain it like that. But I think most people associate cleaning and disinfecting with the, you know, they use them almost interchangeably, which obviously is not true. So when people are looking at, you know, their cabinets or they're going down the aisle, you know, do you have like, so I just mentioned, I kind of have that nice, force of nature that I like. Are there any other, like, we don't even have to talk about specific brands, but maybe are there any sort of, you mentioned hydrogen peroxide. Are there like any sort of like rock star sort of components that you tell people to look for, you know, based on, you know, sort of halfway point between the two?
Yeah. So the way I look at it is this, if you're old school, nothing beats bleach, right?
Yeah.
If you are middle school and you're kind of like, I don't know, then you just simply cannot beat hydrogen peroxide.
Okay.
Because that is the one that works all the time, every time. And thankfully, we did start to see a rise in hydrogen peroxide as a result of the pandemic. So that's good. Now, if you're full school into the EWG and you want to make sure that it's kind of like, you know, a NASCAR fan, Are you only going to be what's on, are you only going to buy what's on the fire suit? Because if you're that type of person, then I'm going to tell you one thing. You got to follow the 5 and 10 rule.
Yeah.
You got to make sure that it has a minimum of 5% of whatever the active ingredient is, thymol, citric acid, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you're going to have to leave it there for about 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like we talked about earlier. That makes total sense.
But the thing is, and this is something that's just been coming out. So this is kind of like headline news, and you're going to hear about it more often. We now have seen citric acid become an effective disinfectant at like 1 minute. And it's not changing the formulation to any great extent. It's just the fact that citric acid works incredibly well and incredibly fast. And so you have to be able to slow it down. And so they slow down the activity so that within a minute, it does all the killing that you need it to do. Now, this is just coming out. You're going to start seeing names on your shelves probably sometime in 2024. But okay. That's going to be able to also bridge the two, just like hydrogen peroxide.
That's so very cool.
If we were to have this conversation probably in 6 months, I'd be like, your best bets are hydrogen peroxide and citric acid. And I do want to say one more thing when it comes to the sort of the names. Vinegar is 5% acetic acid, not citric acid, acetic acid. It too can do a really good job after 10 minutes of contact time, but please don't dilute it. Mm. Open the window instead.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I'm one of those people, I can't handle the smell of vinegar. So for me, I'm like, no way.
I have many a friend and colleague who hates the smell of vinegar. And of course, when Jason does his little thing of, you know, trying to put the baking soda in the vinegar and it off gases and everyone's just staring at me, I'm like, wow,
exactly.
This is a natural way to clean the drain. And they're like, why don't you use a blank, insert your brand name here? And I'm like, why would I do that?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, so, and I think that is good news for people to hear that, you know, especially if you are the type of person that does use more of these like vinegars or even, you know, lemon juice, all these things like, which has citric acid, like again, making sure you're not diluting things, making sure you're following the 5 and 10 rule. And just being aware of it, I think is really important. Since you talked about the drain, I think that's really interesting. We're for the most part, we've been sticking to like household, like sort of countertop cleaners. But when we talk about laundry, we talk about dishwashers, like obviously those two things are also important to consider when we're thinking about disinfecting, right? You want to make sure you're getting food residue off things in a you know, way that actually works, or you want to make sure that you're washing your sheets you know, with hot water, you know, sorry, folks, you know, hot water true. Or, you know, making sure that you're really getting stuff actually clean. I remember one time, I mean, just kind of having a sort of brain unlock moment when somebody said, you know, people that rely oftentimes on just very scented laundry detergents, it's because the clothes themselves really aren't getting that clean. So there's like still a quote unquote smell that then you mask with like fragrance. And I was like, oh, that makes some sense, right?
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Oh, and it's absolutely true, because there are two reasons for that. One is that your laundry process is not effective enough to be able to remove or kill the bacteria that are still in your clothing. And therefore, what ends up happening is that you still have some remnants of what was there, their byproducts, their waste products, their poop, if you will. But then they're also going to start growing again as soon as it gets warm and damp and everything like that. And that ends up reducing the life of clothing. What's really funny is that we now have antimicrobials that they're putting into clothing to help make it last longer. But when it comes to the laundry tub itself, now this is something I was involved in about 20 years ago, we could literally swab the inside of a laundry tub, and it would just be like swabbing someone's mouth. Like,
wow.
That's how much bug was or bacteria was still in there. So not only should you be using the hot water and, of course, the bleach if you're using towels and things like that, because they should be made to be able to resist that sort of bleachiness, but also you should be making sure that you're doing at least one bleach run of your tub at least every, I'd say every season. And so you don't put anything in there. You just run a hot water. You run it to the highest level. You add some bleach, and it's going to be able to kill whatever happens to be in there.
Yeah.
We're starting to now see some of these washing machine companies coming out with enzyme tablets and things like that that you do for a cleaning run so that you don't have to quote unquote kill. And that's okay too, but you have to realize that you have to hope that the effectiveness is just to remove all those biofilms so that you start with a fresh tub. So that's another thing we're heading down. And of course, when we start talking about laundry, we also start thinking about, well, are you putting in a little, you know, liquid, or are you putting in a pod or a capsule or a tablet or something along those lines? Because this is where we start getting into the outside packaging as well.
Absolutely. And you and I were talking about that before we started recording, which is, you know, I think there is a misconception, you know, being spread from mini size, which is, you know, these Tide pods, these dishwasher pod things, you know, they've got a plastic around them. Let's talk about that, because people are freaking out about that. They're like, hey, guess what? Like, this isn't biodegrading. This is actually really bad for the environment. And so let's kind of debug it. Let's talk a little bit about that. So, you know, I mean, there's actually a bill that got introduced in February in New York City. It's called, well, the bill is nicknamed Pods Are Plastic, and they're trying to ban laundry and dish detergent pods. So let's talk, like, why, what is this type of plastic? And really, what's the controversy going on?
Well, If you have been anywhere near a news, radio, television station in the last 3 months, you've probably heard the term microplastic.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the microplastic has to come from somewhere.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, we blamed water bottles. And, you know, that was good because water bottles were actually contributing to it. However, when you start looking at what is being used to essentially house detergent pods, because detergent pods essentially are liquid that are kept inside of a pod, right? As opposed to a tablet that dissolves in the water. You can also look at laundry sheets, which also are a synthetic sort of polyester type of fabric. Then what ends up happening is while it's being sort of used up and everything, then it goes into the water and it drains away. Well, where did the pod go?
Yeah.
It's like, can you imagine literally if you had like a Keurig or one of those things and you put the tab in there and then you ran it and then all of a sudden the tab's gone. You're like,
where did the coffee, where's the container? You know, and I think it's a good question for us to ask. And I'd also say too, I'm the type of person who I like powders. Like, I've always really liked powders. I have a toddler. We're about to start potty training. God bless us. But we've been doing cloth diapering for a long time. And when I started off on that journey as a germaphobe, I was so worried about making sure I was really getting everything clean. So I went down this whole path of trying to make sure that I had the best laundry routine, like we just talked about, where I was using bleach, where I was really, really getting to the root of the disinfection. But it's actually really hard nowadays to find powder. And I don't know if it's because it's not as, you know, the companies aren't making as much money from it. But when we talk about these pods, oftentimes you're kind of SOL if you don't want to use pods, right?
Yeah. And we're starting to sort of see that transition very much like Keurig capsules, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go into a grocery store, at least up here in Canada, you're going to see a very small section of the coffee aisle that is devoted to ground coffee or beans. And then the rest of the aisle is all different types of pods.
Yep, you're right. I hadn't even thought about that, but you're so right. Like that whole wall of bagged coffee is shrinking.
Exactly. So what ends up happening now is that we're starting to see this sort of pod mentality taking over.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, convenience is always going to win over intelligence. Sorry.
Yes.
But anyways, the thing is when you start seeing that happening, you don't give yourself an opportunity to think that maybe there's a trade-off in terms of ecology and ecosystems when it comes to this convenience.
Yeah.
And while we may not see it so much, especially when you're looking at something like an espresso where you can actually send the capsules back, right? When it comes to pods, there is nothing there because it's been dissolved and it's been sent into the wastewater. So in that sense, the trade-off is you contributing to the 700,000 particles per kilometer squared of wastewater that's being dumped out into the regular estuaries. Or maybe find just a dissolving tablet that you just throw in there.
Yep, or powder, like I said. And so the type of plastic that is, typically in these pods or even laundry sheets, because, you know, laundry sheets also have this, is a PVA, polyvinyl alcohol. And I think, you know, that there is debate, though. What you and I were talking about was, you know, there has been a campaign, this pods are plastic, et cetera, for people to say, yes, these all have lots of microplastics. They're really bad and unsafe and, you know, we should get rid of them. Mm-hmm. I think it's a valid discussion to have, but when you really dig, the science isn't supporting this, right? Isn't that correct?
Well, I mean, the reality is that you are essentially going to be putting plastics into the environment. Okay.
Yeah.
And in that sense, you start thinking, okay, well, there could be a better way. Now, the thing is that when you're dealing with a group that has, you know, a tablet or a powder, they're going to say, get rid of the plastic altogether, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I like to sort of bridge between different components because I still think that there is a way that we can enjoy a pod. Have you ever had kombucha?
I have. Yes,
okay.
It's very good. Well, it depends.
Yes,
sometimes it's very good. Sometimes it's awful.
Sometimes you drink it and it's like, if I wanted vinegar, I would have.
I know, vinegar. Right? Yeah, me over here with vinegar. Yikes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But you know what it's made from, right? The SCOBY,
yes.
The symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast.
Yes.
Well, did you know that that thing is held together by something called bacterial cellulose?
I did not know that. Interesting.
And the thing about bacterial cellulose is that it is now being made into clothing. It's now being made into leather, vegan leather, and it is now being made into components that you may actually be able to use as a surface because a lot of wraps are made with a different type of cellulose. So what would happen is if you could make a pod that didn't use polyvinyl alcohol, but instead used bacterial cellulose so that when it went into the laundry, instead of having any kind of microplastics that are going to go into the water, you're going to actually end up with just good old-fashioned sugar.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I mean, that to me would be, that's the goal, right? Because then we wouldn't feel so upset about, you know, the microplastic question, the PVA, et cetera. And again, I would just really hope that the companies are thinking about this, both in terms of the environmental impact, but also like what consumers are asking for. Because, you know, like we said, two sides to this debate, at the end of the day, we are still putting plastics into the environment, like you mentioned. So why don't we just not?
Exactly. This is a huge issue that has been going around for decades and decades and decades, is that when you have the polarization of two different groups, right, they're going to start going into the minutia. Like literally their arguments are going to be smaller than the nanoparticles themselves.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when that happens, everything gets stalled. What we need is for someone to essentially say, look, there is a better way that we can do this. Now, someone did that with hydrogen peroxide. Someone said, you know what, let's get it out of that brown bottle. Let's find a way that we can accelerate it so that we can turn it into an effective, eco-friendly disinfectant. They did that. Someone did that with citric acid because they were just like, you know what, we need this to happen. I'm sure one day someone's going to do it with vinegar. It'll smell like kombucha. I'm sure it's kombucha scented disinfectant, whatever. But the fact is that unless we have somebody who's willing to stand up and say, you know, we should be looking at it from this perspective, and it's going to start at the research level, I get it. We're always going to have these minutia arguments like we're having right now with this pods are plastic sort of legislation. It serves no one. All it does is it just wastes time and money.
Absolutely. You know, and that is a common, not only, you were so right in saying this has been happening, this has literally been happening forever. It's so much easier for, you know, bad actors or even just people in general to say, you know what, it's so complicated that let's just ignore it, right? Or it's so complicated that we can't actually figure out a solution. So let's just continue to have these debates and actually not make any progress, like you mentioned. So I totally agree. I think making sure that we are, you know, as consumers, supporting companies, you know, research, all of these types of initiatives so that we can actually have solutions come up is key. And obviously from a governmental perspective, we could do things like, you know, increase funding, et cetera. So making sure that you're as a politically informed person voting for people who seem like they would incentivize this type of behavior is really, really impactful. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, listeners, I hope you learned a little bit more about the science behind cleaning and really understanding, you know, the science behind cleaning versus disinfecting. Like, there is so much to be thought about when you are thinking about, like, just your general, your cleaning habits. But you don't have to be overwhelmed. Like, I hope we didn't scare you too much, right? I don't think we did. I think it was pretty good, right?
I don't think that there's a lot of people who are going to be scared what we've discussed, because at the end of the day, there's really nothing to be scared about.
Yeah.
I think, however, at least I'm hoping that the next time you're in the disinfectant cleaner aisle or the laundry aisle, you'll take a second look and think about what we've talked about and sort of maybe scratch your head and say, you know, maybe there actually is a better way. And then,
absolutely.
You know, and honestly, when it comes to finding a better way, and this happened in, again, a totally separate environment, the meat industry, people essentially were not buying meats that essentially were from animals that had been given antibiotics.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing labels that say made from animals or meat that comes from animals that were not given antibiotics. You can do it with the power of your wallet. And as a result of that, when you make these decisions, if we start pushing together and we start creating these movements, then I have a feeling that we'll start to see those changes at the distributor and at the supplier level, not just simply at the consumer.
Oh, me too. And that's why we do this podcast. That's why we're excited about all of these conversations. Well, Jason, thank you so much for joining us. Listeners, we'll include links to, you know, a few articles and things we talked about in the show notes. But really enjoyed the conversation, Jason. Thanks so much.
It was such a pleasure. Take care.
Joining us on another episode of Good Together. To get show notes and more, head to brightly.eco/podcast. Finally, don't forget to join in on the conversation with us on social media. You'll find us on almost everything at brightly.eco. Don't forget, we're all on this journey together, so have fun putting the planet first and stay curious.